appeared on her bare arm, two more on her face. Long, slicing wounds with every gesture that Serafina made. Ivy shrieked, "Serafina, please!" She fell to her knees among the bright cushions, one hand outstretched towards the master vampire.
"Serafina, master, please!"
Serafina walked around her, one gliding movement at a time.
"If you had held your temper, they would all be ours now. I knew their hearts, their minds, their deepest fears. We would have broken them all. They would have broken the truce, and we could have feasted on them to our blood's content."
She was almost even with me. I wanted to move back away from her, but she might see it as a sign of weakness. Her dress brushed my leg, and I didn't care. I did not want her to touch me. I moved back, and she caught my wrist. I hadn't even seen her move. I stared at that silk-gloved hand as if a snake had just coiled around my wrist. Hell, I'd have rather had the snake.
"Come, necromancer. Help me punish this bad vampire."
"No, thanks," I said. My voice sounded shaky. It matched the fluttering in my gut. She hadn't done anything to me yet except touch me, but touch makes all power stronger. If she tried a mind trick now, I was finished.
"Ivy would have taken great delight in your pain, necromancer."
"That's her problem, not mine." I was staring very hard at the silky cloth of Serafina's dress. I had a terrible urge to look upward to meet her eyes. I didn't think it was her power, just my own morbid compulsion. It's hard to be tough when you're staring at someone's body and being led around by the hand like a child. Ivy lay on the floor, half propped on her arms. Her lovely face was a mass of deep cuts. Bone gleamed in the candlelight from one cheek. Her right arm had a cut that showed muscle twitching and bloody. Ivy stared up at me, and behind the pain was a hatred strong enough to light a match. The anger rose from her in slapping waves. Serafina knelt beside her, drawing me down with her. I glanced back at Jean-Claude. Janos had a white spider hand on his chest. Larry mouthed the word, "Gun." I shook my head. She hadn't hurt me yet. Not yet. The hand jerked my arm hard enough to wrench my head around to face her. We were eye to eye, suddenly, horribly. What I saw in her eyes wasn't horrible. Her eyes, which I would have sworn were some pale shade, looked solid wood brown. My mother's eyes. I think she meant for it to be comforting or seductive. It wasn't. My skin went cool with fear. "Stop it."
"You don't want me to stop," she said.
I tried to pull my arm out of her grasp. I might as well have tried to move the sun to a different part of the sky. "All you can offer me is death. My dead mother in your dead eyes." I stared into those brown eyes that I never thought to see this side of heaven. I yelled at my mother's eyes because I couldn't look away. Serafina wouldn't let me, and I couldn't fight her on that. Not while she touched me. "You're a walking corpse, and everything else is just lies."
"I am not dead, Anita."
There was an echo of my mother's voice in her words. She raised her other hand as if to caress my cheek. I tried to close my eyes, tried to look away. I couldn't. A strange paralysis was sliding over my body, like the feeling you get just on the edge of sleep when your body weighs 1,000 pounds and every movement is nearly impossible. That hand came for me in slow motion, and I knew if she touched me I would fall into her arms. I would cling to her and cry. I remembered my mother's face the last time I'd seen her. The coffin had been dark wood covered in a blanket of pink roses. I knew Mommy was in there, but they wouldn't let me see. No one could see. "Closed coffin," they said. "Closed coffin." Every adult in my life was having hysterics. The room was full of screams, sobbing. My father collapsed to the floor. He was useless to me. I wanted my mother. The latches on the coffin were silver. I opened them, and I heard a cry behind me. I didn't have much time. The lid was heavy, but I shoved it upward and it moved. I got a glimpse of white satin and shadows. I raised my arms over my head with every ounce of strength and got a glimpse of something. My Aunt Maddie grabbed me back. The lid clanged shut, and she snapped the lock back in place, dragging me away. I didn't struggle. I'd seen enough. It was like looking at one of those pictures that you know must look like something, but your eyes can't make sense of it. It took me years to make sense of it. But what I saw wasn't my mother. Couldn't be my beautiful mother. It had been a husk, something left behind. something to hide in a dark box and let rot. I opened my eyes, and Serafina had pale gray eyes. I pulled my wrist from her suddenly loose grasp and said, "Pain helps." I stood and stepped away from her, and she didn't stop me. Which was good, because I was shaking all over, and it wasn't from the vampire. Memories have teeth, too. She stayed kneeling by Ivy and said,
"Most impressive, necromancer. I will help you find this boy you seek."
Her sudden cooperation was unnerving. Why?
"Because since I attained my full powers, no one has ever slipped my illusions twice in one night. No one living or dead."
She grabbed Ivy by one bloody arm and pulled her into her lap to bleed on the white dress. Ivy gasped.
"Remember this, young master vampire. This mortal did what you could not. She stood against me and won."
She tossed her suddenly away, sending her sprawling across the floor.
"You are not worthy of my sight. Get out."
Serafina stood. The fresh blood stood out in scarlet relief against her white dress and gloves.
"You have impressed us. Now go, all of you."
She turned and walked back to her throne. She didn't sit down. She stood with her back to us, one hand on the chair arm. Perhaps it was my imagination, but she seemed tired. Her ghosts flowed down to meet her in a swirling white mist. There weren't as many individual shapes as before, as if the phantoms had lost some of their solidity.
"Go,"
she said without turning around. The back door was open, but Jean-Claude walked to the doorway that led out the front. I wasn't going to argue, I just wanted out. I didn't give a damn which door we took. We walked coolly, calmly towards the door. I wanted to run. Larry stood next to me, and I could see the pulse in his throat jumping with the effort not to bolt. Jason reached the door a little ahead of us, but he waited and turned, and motioned us through like a doorman or a butler. I caught a glimpse of his eyes, too wide, scared, and knew what the gesture had cost him. We went through. He followed. Jean-Claude brought up the rear. The doors slammed behind us, and we walked out. Just like that. But for the first time, I knew that I'd been let go. I hadn't fought my way out, or bluffed my way out. She could be impressed all she wanted, but she had allowed us to go. Being allowed to leave was not the same thing as winning. I would never go back into that house voluntarily. I would never be near her willingly. Because I'd been impressive tonight, but I couldn't keep it up. Even now, I knew that she could have me. This vampire had my ticket. Had a lie almost worth my immortal soul. Damn. Chapter 28. Jason walked past me into the hotel room. He headed straight for the bathroom. "I'm taking a shower." It was pushy, but he did smell like a decayed corpse. We'd driven back with all the windows rolled down. Most of the time, if you stink, you can't smell someone else. I had some of the rotted stuff on me, but I could still smell Jason. Some smells are too unique to ever really go away.
"Wait," Larry said.
Jason turned, but not like he was happy.
"Use my shower."
He held up a hand before I could say anything.
"It's an hour until dawn. If we want everybody tucked in before that, it makes sense to use both bathrooms."
"I thought we'd all sleep in this room tonight," I said.
"Why?"
he asked. Jean-Claude stood by the love seat looking lovely and unhelpful. Jason just looked impatient.
"Safety in numbers," I said.
Larry shook his head.
"All right, but I can take the werewolf next door and let him shower. Or don't you trust me to even do that?"
He was getting angry again.
"I trust you, Larry. You did good tonight."
I expected a smile. I didn't get it. He looked very serious.
"I killed that vampire, Bruce."
I nodded. I thought we were going to have to kill everything in the room.
"So did I."
He sank into one of the chairs.
"I've never killed anyone before."
"It was a vampire. It's not the same thing as killing a person."
"Yeah, right. And how many corpses have you given CPR to lately?"
I glanced at Jean-Claude smiling at me. I shrugged.
"Just one." "Can you give us some privacy here?" I asked.
"I will hear what you are saying no matter where I stand in this room,"
Jean-Claude said. "Illusion is all. Just back off," I said. Jean-Claude bowed his head slightly and took Jason to one side of the room near the windows. I knew he'd hear everything, but at least he wouldn't be standing over us.
You don't really believe he's dead, do you? Larry asked.
You saw what happened to those two vampires, I said. They are just rotting corpses. Everything else is illusion.
You think he ever looks like that?
I looked at Jean-Claude's back for a minute.
I'm afraid I do.
How can you date him after seeing that?
I shook my head.
I don't know. Corpse or not, you tried to keep him alive.
He reacted to the look on my face.
Alive, undead, whatever you want to call it, you tried to preserve it. You were scared he was really dead.
I just looked at him.
So? So, I killed another living being, or undead being. Hell, Anita. Bruce was so newly dead, he seemed human.
Probably why one bullet to the chest finished him.
How am I supposed to feel about that?
Killing him, you mean?
Yeah.
They are monsters, Larry. Some of them are prettier than others, but they are monsters.
Never doubt that.
You can honestly tell me that you think Jean-Claude is a monster.
It was more statement than question. I almost looked at the monster in question, but I didn't. I'd looked at him enough for one night.
Yeah,
I do.
Now, ask her if she thinks she's a monster.
Jean-Claude leaned on the back of the love seat, his arms crossed over his chest. Larry looked a little startled, but he said,
Anita?
I shrugged.
Sometimes.
Jean-Claude smiled.
See, Lawrence? Anita thinks we're all monsters.
Larry's not, I said.
Give him time.
That was a little too close to the truth. I asked for privacy, or did you forget?
I forget nothing, ma petite, but time grows short. My wolf is not the only one that needs a bath. Only our young friend is still fresh.
I looked at Larry. There wasn't a drop of blood on him. He was the only one who hadn't wrestled with vampires tonight. He shrugged.
Sorry. I just couldn't get anybody to bleed on me tonight.
Don't joke, Larry, I said. With Serafina, I think you'll get another chance.
Sadly true, ma petite.
How long can you go without a coffin? I asked. He smiled.
Concern over my well-being. I am touched.
Don't give me crap. I opened a frickin' vein for you tonight.
If I have not thanked you for saving my life tonight, ma petite, my apologies.
I looked at him. He looked pleasant, amused, but it was a mask. His expression when he didn't want you to know what he was thinking, but didn't want you to know that he didn't want you to know.
Don't mention it. I will remember that you saved me, ma petite. You could have been free of me. Thank you.
It sounded sincere enough.
You're welcome.
I need to get this crud off me, Jason said. He sounded just a touch frantic. I was betting he'd be trying to scrub off more than just dirt. But memories don't wash that easily. More's the pity. Go on, both of you. Jason can scrub up in Larry's room. It's only practical. Larry grinned at me.
Thanks.
I meant it when I said you did good tonight. I finally got the smile I'd expected.
Come on, Jason. Hot water and fresh towels await.
Larry held the door for Jason and gave me a little salute.
Jeez.
Alone again with Jean-Claude. Would this night never end? You never answered my question about the coffin, I said.
I will be all right for another night or two.
How did Serafina go from being your equal in power to being what we saw tonight? He shook his head.
I truly do not know, ma petite. She surprised me badly. She did not have to let us go tonight. As long as she did not harm us, we could have been her guests for the day.
Are you surprised she let us go? I asked.
Yes, he said.
Jean-Claude pushed away from the love seat.
Take your shower, ma petite. I will await the young men's return.
I thought you could go next, wash the blood out of your hair. He put a hand up to the back of his hair. He grimaced at the feel of it.
Distasteful, but I want a bath, ma petite. It takes longer than a shower, so you go first.
I looked at him for a long moment.
If you do not hurry, I will not have time for a bath before dawn. I would hate to sleep on your clean sheets covered in blood.
I took a deep breath and let it out slowly. Fine. Just be sure you stay out of the bathroom.
My word of honor is that I will not barge in on you.
Yeah, right. Though strangely enough, I believed him. Jean-Claude had been trying to seduce me for a long time. A frontal assault just wasn't his style. I went to take my shower. Chapter 29. Ronnie had dragged me into Victoria's Secret. I had pointed out that no one would see my underwear or my nightclothes except other women in the gym locker room. Ronnie had replied,
"You'll see them."
The logic escaped me, but she had talked me into a robe. It was burgundy, the color of wine-dark peonies. It glowed against my pale skin and matched some of the bruises blossoming on my back. Nothing like getting thrown into a wall to give you a little color. The bite mark on my back wasn't very deep. Hard for humanoid fangs to sink in from that angle. The fang marks on my wrist were deeper. They were two neat little holes, almost dainty. It didn't hurt as much as it should have. Maybe vampires did have painkillers in their saliva, or maybe it was the fangs. I still couldn't believe that I'd let him sink fangs into me. Shit. I pulled the robe closer around me. The material was heavy enough to be cozy on a winter evening and had wide, silky cuffs and more silk lining the edges. It looked vaguely Victorian, a little masculine. I looked delicate in it, like a Victorian doll that hadn't gotten completely dressed yet. I put on an oversized black t-shirt under the robe. It ruined some of the effect, but it beat the heck out of wearing nothing but a robe and underwear out to greet the boys. I retrieved the Browning from the back of the stool where it had sat during my shower. I carried it with me to the bathroom and hesitated. I always went armed. Hell, I slept with a gun, but I didn't feel like slipping on a holster. I put the Browning away and settled for slipping the Firestar into the robe pocket. Made the cloth hang funny, but if something nasty came through the door, I was ready for it. Jean-Claude was standing at the window when I opened the bedroom door. He had opened the drapes and was leaning against the window's edge, staring out into the darkness. He turned when the door opened, though I knew he'd heard me before that.
Ma petite, you look lovely.
It's the only robe I own, I said.
Of course,
he said. His face had that amused mask on it again. This time I would have liked to know what he was thinking. His midnight blue eyes were very intense. They didn't match the nonchalant expression. Maybe I didn't want to know what he was thinking. Where are Larry and Jason?
They have come and gone, he said.
Gone?
Jason had a sudden craving, and Larry drove him in the jeep.
I just looked at him. There is such a thing as room service.
It is the wee hours of the morning, ma petite. The room service menu is somewhat limited. Jason has donated blood twice to me tonight. He needed protein.
Jean-Claude smiled.
It was either takeout, or he could eat Larry. I thought you'd prefer takeout.
Very funny. You shouldn't have sent them alone.
We are safe from Serafina tonight, ma petite, and as long as they stay in town, safe from Xavier.
How can you be so sure? I crossed my arms over my stomach. He leaned his back against the window and looked at me.
Your Monsieur Kirkland handled himself well tonight. I think you worry unnecessarily about him.
One night of heroics doesn't keep you safe, I said.
It will be done soon, ma petite. Even Xavier cannot bear the light of day. All the vampires will be seeking shelter. They will have no time to chase our young men.
I stared at him, trying to read past his pleasant face. I wish I was as sure as you seem to be. He smiled then and pushed away from the wall. He slid out of his jacket and let it fall to the rose-colored carpet. What are you doing?
Undressing.
I jerked a thumb at the bedroom. Undress in there. He began unbuttoning his shirt. In the other room right now, I said. He pulled the white shirt out of his pants, working the last few buttons as he walked towards me. The flesh of his chest and stomach had more color than the shirt. He was pumped up and human-looking on blood, part of it mine. The dried blood stains that had soaked through the shirt marred the pale perfection of his body. I expected him to try to kiss me or something, but he walked past me. The back of the shirt was brownish with dried blood. He peeled it off his skin with a sound like tearing. He dropped the shirt on the carpet and walked into the bedroom. I stood there staring after him. There had been white scars on his back. At least, I thought that's what they were. Hard to tell through all the blood. He left the bedroom door open, and in a few minutes I heard water running in the bathtub. I sat down in one of the straight-back chairs. I wasn't sure what else I was supposed to do. Water ran for a long time, then silence, then sloshing water. He was in the tub. He hadn't closed the bathroom door first. Great.
Ma petite, he called.
I sat there for a minute, unwilling to move.
Ma petite, I know you are there. I can hear you breathing.
I walked to the edge of the bedroom door, very careful not to look inside. I leaned my back against the wall and crossed my arms. What do you want?
There seem to be no clean towels.
What am I supposed to do about it?
Could you call down to housekeeping and have some sent up?
I guess so.
Thank you, ma petite.
I stomped over to the phone, pissed. He'd known there were no clean towels before he got into the tub. Hell, I'd known there were no clean towels, but I'd been so busy listening to him splash around in the water I hadn't thought of it. I was as mad at me as I was at him. He was always a tormenting son of a bitch. I was supposed to watch myself around him better than this. I was in a hotel room that looked like a freaking bridal suite with Jean-Claude all naked and soapy in the next room. After what I'd seen with Jason, there shouldn't have been this much sexual tension in the air. But there was. Maybe it was habit, or maybe Larry was right. I just didn't believe that Jean-Claude was a rotting corpse. I called for more towels. They would be happy to bring some up. No one bitched about the time. No one questioned. You can always tell how much you're paying for a room by how little they complain. A maid brought me 4 big, soft towels. I looked at her for a full minute, hesitating. I could have her take the towels into Jean-Claude. She said, "Ma'am?" I took the towels, said thanks, and closed the door. I just couldn't let a strange woman see that I had a naked vampire in my tub. I wasn't even sure the vampire part was what made it embarrassing. Good girls do not end up with naked male anything in their bathtubs at 4-something in the morning. Maybe I wasn't a good girl. Maybe I never had been. I hesitated at the bedroom door. The room was dark. The only light came from the bathroom, spilling in an oblong along the carpet. I crushed the towels to my chest, took a deep breath, and stepped into the room. I could see the bathtub from here, but mercifully not all of it. I had a glimpse of white porcelain and a mound of white bubbles. Just seeing the bubble bath made the muscles in my shoulders relax a little. Bubbles can hide a multitude of sins. I stopped at the bathroom door. Jean-Claude lay back against the edge of the tub. His black hair was wet and had obviously been cleaned. Strands of it clung to his bare shoulders. His arms lay propped on the edge of the bathtub, his head resting against the dark tile of the wall. One pale hand was suspended in midair, as if reaching for something, but the hand was utterly limp. His eyes were closed, making black half-moons against his pale cheeks. Beads of water clung to his face, and what I could see of his body. He looked almost asleep. His knee came up through the mound of bubbles, a surprising glimpse of bare, wet skin. He turned his head and opened his eyes. The midnight blue of his eyes seemed darker. Maybe it was the way the water made his hair seem heavier, blacker. I took a shallow breath and said, "Here are the towels."
"Could you place them here, please?"
He gestured with that one half-suspended hand. "Here" was the closed top of the toilet, which was close enough to the tub for grabbing. "I'll put them on the edge of the sink."
"I'll drip water all over the floor getting them from there," he said.
His voice was neutral. No vampiric tricks, almost no tone at all. He was right, and I was being silly. He wouldn't grab me and ravish me. If that had been the plan, he could have done that years ago. I placed the towels on the stool, eyes studiously anywhere but the tub.
"You must have questions about tonight," he said.
I glanced at him. The water on his naked torso caught the light like quicksilver. Suds clung to his chest, just under one nipple. I had a horrible urge to brush off the bubbles. I stepped back until I was standing by the far wall. "It's not like you to offer answers," I said.
"I am feeling generous tonight."
His voice had that quality that voices get when they are edging towards sleep. "If you weren't naked in a tub of bubble bath, would you be offering to answer questions?" He smiled then, a quick, familiar expression.
"Perhaps not, but if I must answer your ravenous curiosity, isn't it more fun this way?"
"Fun for whom?"
"Both of us, if you would only admit it."
That got a smile from me, and I didn't want a smile. I didn't want to be enjoying watching him all soapy and wet. I wanted to be afraid of him, and I was. But I also wanted him. Wanted to run my hands down his wet flesh. Wanted to touch what lay under those bubbles. I didn't want intercourse. I couldn't imagine that with him. But I wanted to do a little exploring. I hated that. He was a corpse. Surely what I'd seen tonight convinced me of that.
"You're frowning, ma petite. Why?"
"I asked you if the 2 rotting vampires were illusion. You said no. I asked if your form was real. You said yes. Both forms are real, you said."
"That is true," he said.
Are you a rotting corpse? He settled lower in the warm, soapy water, drawing his arms into it until only his head showed above the surface of the water.
That is not one of my forms.
That isn't an answer. He raised a pale hand from the water, a handful of bubbles cupped like a snowball.
There are different vampiric abilities, ma petite, you know that.
What's that have to do with it? He raised his other hand and began to play with the bubbles, trailing them from hand to hand.
Janos and his two female companions are a different type of vampire than I am, than most of us are. They are much rarer. If you ever see me as a rotted corpse, I will be well and truly dead. They can rot and reform, and it makes them much harder to kill. The only true surety is fire.
Volunteering an awful lot of information, aren't you? He lowered his hands in the water, washing the soap away. He sat up a little straighter. Suds clung to his body.
Perhaps I am afraid you will think that what happened with Jason would happen with us.
We will never test that theory, I said.
You sound so sure of that,
he said.
Your lust perfumes the air, and yet you truly believe that we will never make love. How can you want me almost as much as I want you, yet be sure we will never know each other's bodies?
I wasn't sure I had an answer for that one. I slid down the wall and sat with my knees drawn up to my chest. The pocket with the gun in it clunked against the wall. I moved the gun to a better position and said,
We just won't, Jean-Claude, not ever.
I just can't. A part of me regretted that, but only part.
Why, ma petite?
Sex is about trust. I'd have to trust someone implicitly to have sex with them. I don't trust you. He stared at me with his blue, blue eyes, looking all scrumptious and wet.
You mean that, don't you?
I nodded.
Yeah, I do. I do not understand you, ma petite. I try, but still I do not.
You're pretty much a riddle to me, too, if that's any comfort.
It isn't. If you were a woman who had casual lusts, we would have been in bed long ago.
He sighed and sat up even straighter in the water so it hit him just above the waist.
Of course, if you were a woman of casual appetites, I don't think I would love you.
You enjoy the chase, the challenge, I said.
True. But it is more than that with you, if only you had believed me.
He leaned forward, drawing his knees to his naked chest, rounding his shoulders to hug himself. White scars dribbled down his back from his shoulders to vanish into the water, not a lot of them, but enough.
What made the scars on your back?
Unless it was a holy item, you should have been able to heal them. He laid his cheek on his knees so he could look at me. He looked younger, more human, vulnerable suddenly.
Not if the injury occurred before I died.
Who whipped you?
I was the whipping boy for an aristocrat's son.
I stared at him. You're telling me the truth, aren't you?
Yes.
Is that why Janos chose whips tonight? To remind you where you came from?
Yes.
You weren't born into the aristocracy?
I was born in a house with a dirt floor, ma petite.
I looked at him. Yeah, right. He raised his head.
If I was going to make something up, ma petite, it would be more romantic, more entertaining than being a French peasant.
So you were a servant in the castle?
I was their only son's constant companion. When he had clothes made, so did I. His tutor was my tutor. His riding instructor mine. I learned swordplay and dancing and the proper way to eat at table. And when he was bad, I was punished, because he was their only child, their only heir to an old family name. People speak of child abuse now.
He leaned back in the tub, cuddling down into the warm water.
They complain of spanking. They have no idea what true abuse is. When I was a boy, parents thought nothing of taking a horsewhip to a misbehaving child, or beating them bloody. Even the aristocrats beat their children. It was normal. But he was the only heir, the only child. So they paid money to my parents and took me. The lady of the manor chose me because I was fair of face. When the vampire who made me sought me out, she said my beauty called to her.
Wait a minute. He turned his head to give me the full weight of those dark blue eyes. I worked hard at not looking away. This gorgeous body and face is all vampire illusion, right? I mean, no one's this beautiful.
I told you once that it was not my powers that made you see me as you do. Not most of the time, at any rate.
Seraphina said you were a catamite for any vampire who would have you. What did she mean?
Vampires kill for food,
But they bring others over for many reasons. Some for money, wealth, even title, love. But I was brought over for lust. When I was young and weak, they passed me around among them. One would grow tired of me, but there was always another.
I stared at him, horrified. You're right. If you were going to make up a story, this wouldn't be it.
The truth is so often disappointing or ugly. Don't you find that, ma petite?
I nodded.
Yeah. Seraphina was old. I thought vampires weren't supposed to age.
Whatever age we die at is the age we remain.
Did you know Seraphina when you were young?
Yes.
Did you sleep with her?
Yes.
How could you let her touch you?
I was given to her as a gift by a master that makes even her new and improved powers seem weak. I had very little choice.
He stared at me.
She knows what you want, your greatest need, your most treasured wish, and she'll make it come true or seem to. What did she offer you, ma petite? What could she offer you that nearly won you tonight?
I looked away then. I didn't want to meet his eyes. What did she offer you all those years ago?
Power.
I looked up at that.
Power?
He nodded.
Power to escape them all.
But you had to have the ability to be a master vampire inside you from the beginning. No one can give that to you, I said. He smiled, but it wasn't a happy smile.
I know that now, but then I thought only she could save me from an eternity of...
His words trailed off and he submerged, leaving only a few black locks floating on the top of the water. He sat up with a loud breath of air, blinking the water from his eyes. The water had clumped his thick, dark eyelashes. He ran his hands through his wet hair, and it trailed over his shoulders. Your hair wasn't this long when we first met.
You seem to prefer longer hair on your men.
If you're dead, how can your hair grow?
That is a question for you to answer, he said.
He ran his hands through his hair again, squeezing the ends out. He reached out a hand for a towel. I scrambled to my feet. I'll leave you to get dressed.
Have Jason and Larry returned?
He asked.
No. Then I won't be getting dressed.
He stood, drawing the towel towards him. I had a glimpse of one side of his pale, naked body, water streaming from it. The towel moved into view just in time. I fled. Chapter 30. I huddled in the straight-back chair farthest from the bedroom, but I was staring at the doorway. Shit. I wanted to run from the room, but why? It wasn't Jean-Claude I didn't trust. It was me. Fuck. I touched the gun in my robe pocket. It was smooth and hard and reassuring, but it wouldn't help me now. Violence, I understood. Sex gave me more problems. I honestly didn't want to sleep with him, but part of me was hoping for another glimpse of naked flesh. A long line of naked thigh, perhaps? Or maybe... I put the palms of my hands over my eyes as if I could get the image out of my head by just pressing.
Ma petite?
His voice sounded closer than the bathroom. I didn't want to look, as if, just as Grandma Blake had said, I'd be struck blind. I felt him standing in front of me, felt the movement of air. I lowered my hands a millimeter at a time. He was kneeling in front of me, one of the thick white towels wrapped around his waist. I lowered my hands to my lap. Beads of water still clung to his skin. He'd combed his hair, but it was wet, slicked back, leaving his face plainer, more unadorned than normal. His eyes seemed bluer without his hair to frame them. He put a hand on each chair arm and raised himself up. His lips brushed mine in a soft, nearly chaste kiss. He moved back from me, letting go of the chair. I could taste my heart in my throat, and it wasn't fear. Jean-Claude touched my hands, lifted them up. He placed my hands on his bare shoulders. The skin was warm, smooth, wet. He held my wrists in his hands, lightly, very lightly. I could have pulled away at any time. He ran my hands down his slick body. I pulled my hands free. He said nothing, did nothing. He stayed kneeling, looking at me, waiting. I could see the pulse in his neck jumping against the skin, and I wanted to touch it. I slid my hands across his shoulders and lowered my face to his. He started to move into me for a kiss, but I slid my hand along his jaw and turned his head away. I touched lips to his neck and slid my mouth down his skin until I could taste his pulse beating against my tongue. He tasted of perfumed soap, water, and clean skin. I slid from the chair to the floor, kneeling in front of him. He was taller now, but not too tall. I licked water off his chest and let myself do something I'd wanted to do for months. I ran my tongue over his nipple, and he shuddered against me. I licked water off the center of his chest and ran my hands along his waist up the damp curve of his back. He pulled the sash of my robe, and I didn't protest. I let his hands slide under the robe, around my waist, with nothing but the t-shirt between his flesh and mine. He ran his hands up my sides, his thumbs playing over my ribcage. The gun swung heavily in the loose cloth. It was annoying. I raised my face to his. His arm slid behind my back, pressing me against the long, wet line of his body. The towel was perilously loose. His lips brushed mine. Then the kiss became something more. Harder, nearly bruising with his arms locked behind my shoulders. My hand slid down to his waist, rubbing the sliding top of the towel, and found it had already slipped. My hand touched the smooth top of his buttocks. Only the pressure of our bodies kept the towel in place. He ate at my mouth, and I felt something sharp, painful. I jerked back and tasted blood. Jean-Claude let me go. He sat back on his heels, the towel gathered in his lap.
I am sorry, ma petite. I got carried away.
I touched my mouth and came away with a spot of blood.
You nicked me.
He nodded.
I am truly sorry.
I'll just bet you are, I said.
Do not go all self-righteous on me, ma petite. You have finally admitted to yourself, to me, that you feel the pull of my body.
I sat on the floor by the chair with my robe in disarray. The t-shirt had ridden up to my waist. I guess it was a little too late to protest my innocence. Fine. Lust. You happy?
Almost, he said.
And now there was something in his eyes. Something dark and drowning, and older than it should have been.
I can offer you my mortal body and more, ma petite. It can be between us much more than any human lover could offer.
Would I lose a little blood each time?
That was an accident, he said.
I stared at him, all pale and damp, kneeling on the floor with the white towel bundled into his lap, leaving nearly every inch of him bare.
This is the first time I've cheated on Richard, I said.
You have been dating me for weeks, he said.
I shook my head. But I haven't been cheating.
This is cheating. Then have you been cheating on me, with Richard?
I didn't know what to say to that. Go get dressed.
Do you really want me to dress?
He asked. I looked away. I was embarrassed now and uncomfortable.
Yes, please.
He stood up, the towel gripped in his hands. I looked down at the floor and didn't have to see his face to picture the smile on it. He walked away from me, and didn't bother moving the towel around behind him. Muscles moved under his skin from calf to waist. He walked naked into the bedroom, and I enjoyed the view. I touched my finger to my tongue. It was still bleeding. That's what I got for French kissing a vampire. Even thinking about it made me nervous.
Ma petite, he called from the other room.
Yeah?
Do you have a blow dryer?
In my suitcase. Help yourself. Thankfully, I dragged my suitcase into the bedroom beside the bathroom door. 1 point for laziness. I was spared another glimpse of his naked body. Now that the hormones were receding, I was embarrassed. I heard the dryer and wondered if he was standing naked in front of the bathroom mirror while he dried his hair. I was very aware that all I had to do was go to the doorway and I could see for myself. I stood up, pulled my t-shirt down, tied my robe securely in place and sat down on the couch. My back was to the bedroom. I wouldn't be seeing anything else. I took the fire star out of my pocket and laid it on the coffee table in front of me. The gun sat there looking very solid, very black, and somehow accusatory. The dryer stopped, and he called to me again.
Ma petite?
What?
Come talk to me as the sun rises.
I glanced up at the window he had opened. The sky outside was less black, not light yet, but not pure darkness anymore. I closed the drapes and went to the bedroom. I left the gun on the table. The Browning was in the bedroom anyway. Jean-Claude had neatly folded the bedspread and blanket at the foot of the bed. Only the wine-dark sheet covered him. He lay with his black hair soft and curling over the dark pillows. The sheet was bunched at his waist.
You can join me if you like.
I leaned against the wall and shook my head.
I'm not offering sex, ma petite. Dawn is too close for that. I offer you your half of the bed.
I'll take the couch. Thanks anyway. He smiled, a slow, knowing curve of lips, his old arrogance peeking back out. It was almost comforting to know nothing had really changed.
It is not me that you do not trust. It is you.
I shrugged. He raised the sheet in front of his chest, an almost protective gesture.
It comes.
Fear in his voice.
What comes? The sun.
I glanced at the closed drapes against the far wall. They were double thick, but a line of grayish light edged them.
You'll be all right like this without your coffin? As long as no one opens the drapes.
He looked at me for a long moment.
I love you, ma petite, as much as I'm able.
I didn't know what to say. Saying I lusted after him didn't seem appropriate. Saying I loved him would be a lie. The light grew stronger, a white edge around the curtains. His body slumped back against the bed. He rolled onto his side, one hand outstretched, the other curling the sheets against his chest. He stared at the growing light, and I could taste his fear. I knelt beside the bed. I almost took his hand, but didn't.
What happens now? You want the truth? Then watch.
I expected his eyes to flutter, his voice to grow sluggish as if he were falling asleep. It didn't happen that way. He closed his eyes all at once. Pain flashed across his face. He whispered,
"It hurts."
His face went slack. I'd seen people die, watched the light fade from their bodies, felt their souls slip away. That was what I saw. He died. The light grew against the drapes, and when it was a solid white line, he died. His breath went out of him in a long rattle. I knelt beside the bed and stared. I knew dead when I saw it, and this was it. Shit. I put my arms on the bed and propped my chin on them. I watched him, waiting for him to breathe, to twitch, something. But there was nothing. I reached out to his one outstretched arm. My fingers hovered above his skin. Then I touched him. The skin was still warm, still human, but he did not move. I checked his wrist, and there was no pulse. No blood moved in his body. Did he know I was here? Did he feel me touching him? I stared at him for what seemed like a long time. So this answered the question. Vampires were dead. Whatever animated them was like my own power, some sort of necromancy. But I knew death when I saw it. It gave necrophilia a whole new slant. Had I only imagined that I felt the brush of his soul leave his body? Surely vampires had no souls, that was part of the point. But I'd felt something leave. If not a soul, what? If a soul, where did it go for the daylight hours? Who watched all the vampires' souls while they lay dead? There was a knock at the door, probably the other boys. I stood up, pulling my robe in tight. I was cold and wasn't sure why. I went to answer the door. The cut on my tongue had almost stopped bleeding. Chapter 31. I dreamed. In the dream, someone held me in their lap. Smooth, dark arms wrapped around me. I looked up into my mother's laughing face. She was the most beautiful woman in the world. I snuggled against her body, and the clean smell of her skin was there. She'd always smelled of hypnotique bath powder. She bent and kissed me on the lips. I had forgotten the taste of her lipstick, the way she brushed my mouth with her thumb, and laughed because she'd gotten bright red lipstick on my small mouth. Her thumb came away with something brighter than lipstick. Blood dripped down her thumb. She'd pricked her skin with a safety pin. It was bleeding. She held her thumb out to me and said, "Kiss it, Anita. Make it all better." But there was too much blood. It ran down her hand. I stared up at her laughing face, and blood ran down it like rain. I woke sitting bolt upright on the velvet couch, gasping for breath. I could still taste her lipstick on my mouth, and the smell of hypnotique bath powder clung to me. Larry sat up on the love seat, rubbing at his eyes. "What's wrong? Did we get our wake-up call?"
"No. I had a bad dream."
He nodded, stretching, then frowned.
"Do you smell perfume?" I stared at him.
What do you mean?
Perfume or powder or something. Do you smell it?
I swallowed and nearly choked on my own pulse.
Yeah, I smell it.
I flung back the extra blanket and threw the lumpy pillow across the room.
Larry swung his legs off the love seat.
What is wrong with you?
I went to the window and flung the drapes open. The bedroom door was closed and Jean-Claude was safely inside. Jason was sleeping in there. I stood in the sunlight and let the heat sink into me. I leaned against the warm glass and only then realized that I was wearing nothing but an oversized t-shirt and my undies.
Ah, well.
I stayed in the sunlight for a few minutes, waiting for my pulse to calm down.
Serafina sent me a dream. The smell is my mother's perfume.
Larry came to stand beside me. He was wearing a pair of gym shorts and a green t-shirt. His curly red hair stuck up in all directions. His blue eyes squinted when he stepped into the light.
I thought only a vampire that had a connection with you, a hold on you, could invade your dreams.
That's what I thought, I said.
How could I smell perfume from your dream?
I shook my head, forehead against the glass.
I don't know.
Has she marked you?
I don't know.
He touched my shoulder, squeezing.
It'll be all right.
I stepped away from him to pace the room. It won't be all right, Larry. Serafina invaded my dreams. No one but Jean-Claude has ever done that.
I stopped because that wasn't true.
Nikolaos had done it. But that was after she'd bitten me. I shook my head. Either way, it was a very bad sign.
What are you going to do?
Kill her.
Murder her, you mean?
If Larry's earnest eyes hadn't been staring at me, I'd have said, you bet. But it's hard to contemplate murder with someone staring at you like you've kicked their favorite puppy.
I'll try to get a warrant, I said.
If you can't?
If it's her or me, Larry, then it's her, okay?
Larry looked at me sadly.
What I did last night was murder.
I know that. But I didn't go in planning to kill someone.
You stay in this business long enough and you will.
He shook his head.
I don't believe that.
Believe what you want, but it's still the truth. These things are too dangerous to play fair.
If you really believe that, then how can you date Jean-Claude? How can you let him touch you?
I shook my head.
I never said I was consistent.
You can't defend yourself, can you?
Defend which one? Killing Serafina or dating Jean-Claude?
Either, both. Hell, Anita, if you're one of the bad guys, you can't be one of the good guys.
I opened my mouth and closed it.
What could I say?
I am one of the good guys, Larry, but I'm not going to be a martyr. If that means breaking the law, so be it.
Are you going to get a warrant?
His face was very neutral as he asked.
He looked older suddenly. Even with his orangey curls sticking up, he looked solemn. I was watching Larry grow older before my eyes. Not in age, but in experience. The expression in his eyes was older than it had been a few months ago.
Seen too much, done too much.
He was still trying to be Sir Galahad, but Galahad had had God on his side. All Larry had was me. It wasn't enough.
The only way I could get a death warrant is to lie, I said.
I know, he said. I stared at him. Serafina hasn't broken any laws yet. I won't lie about that.
He smiled.
Good. When do we meet Dorcas Bouvier?
3.
Have you figured out what you can sacrifice to raise the zombies Sterling wants done? He asked.
Nope.
He stared at me.
What are you going to tell Sterling?
I shook my head.
I don't know yet.
I wish I knew why he's so hot and heavy to kill Bouvier.
He wants the land, Larry said.
Sterling and company have been saying the Bouvier family, not Magnus Bouvier. That means he's not the only one suing them. So killing Magnus won't solve their problems.
So why do it? Larry asked.
Exactly, I said.
Larry nodded.
We need to talk to Magnus again.
Preferably without Serafina around, I said.
Amen to that, Larry said. I'd love to talk to Magnus, but before we tackle Mr. Bouvier again, I'd like to find some fairy ointment.
Some what?
Didn't you take any classes on fairies?
It was an elective, he said.
Fairy ointment makes you proof against glamour, just in case whatever else Magnus is hiding is nastier than Serafina.
Nothing nastier than that, he said.
True, but just in case, he won't be able to work magic on us. In fact, it's not a bad precaution before we meet Dory. She may not be as scary as Magnus, but she shines, and I'd just as soon she didn't shine all over us.
You think Serafina will find Jeff Quinlan?
If anyone can, she can. She seemed pretty confident she could take Xavier, but then Jean-Claude had been pretty confident he could take her last night. He was wrong. He frowned.
So we're rooting for Serafina?
It sounded wrong put that way, but I nodded. If it's a choice between a vampire that obeys most of the laws and one that slaughters kids, yeah, we're on her side.
You were talking about killing her just a little bit ago.
I can stay out of her way until she saves Jeff and kills Xavier.
Why would she kill him?
Larry asked. He's killing people in her territory. She can say anything she wants, but that's a direct challenge to her authority. Besides, I don't think Xavier will give up Jeff without a fight.
What do you think happened to him last night?
Larry asked. I shook my head. It doesn't do any good to dwell on it, Larry. We're doing all we can.
We could tell the FBI about Serafina.
One thing I've learned is that Master Vamps don't talk to the cops. Too many years of the cops killing them on sight, or trying to.
Okay, he said. But we've still got to come up with something big enough to kill for raising the cemetery tonight, he said.
I'll think on it.
You really have no idea what to do?
He sounded surprised. Short of a human sacrifice, Larry, I don't think I can raise several 300-year-old corpses. Even I've got my limits.
He grinned. Nice to hear you admit it.
I had to smile. It'll be our little secret. He put his hand out, and I slapped it. He slapped mine back, and I felt better. Larry had a way of making me smile. Friends will do that to you.
Chapter 32. Dorcas Bouvier was leaning on a car in the parking lot. Her hair gleamed in the sunlight, swirling as she moved like heavy water. In jeans and a green tank top, she was flawless. Larry tried not to stare at her, but it was hard work. Larry was wearing a blue t-shirt, jeans, white Nikes, and an oversized checked flannel shirt to hide his shoulder holster. I was in jeans and a navy blue polo shirt, black Nikes, and an oversized blue dress shirt. I'd had to borrow it from Larry after my black jacket had gotten covered in vampire goop. Had to have something to hide the browning. Makes people nervous if you go around with a naked gun. Larry and I looked like we'd dressed from the same closet. Dory pushed away from the car.
Shall we go?
We'd like to talk to Magnus.
So you can turn him into the cops?
I shook my head.
So we can find out why Sterling is so hot to kill him.
I don't know where he is, Dorcas said. Maybe it showed on my face because she said,
I don't know where he is, but if I did, I wouldn't tell you. Using magic on the police is a death penalty case. I won't turn him in.
I'm not the police.
She looked at me, eyes narrowing. Did you come to look at Bloody Bones, or to question me about my brother?
How did you know to be waiting here for us? I asked.
I knew you'd be on time.
Her pupils swirled downward to pinpoints, like the eyes of an excited parrot.
Let's go, I said.
She led us to the back of the restaurant where it nearly touched the woods. A path began at the edge of the clearing. It was barely wide enough for a man. Even though we walked single file, the branches whipped at my shoulders. The new green leaves rubbed like velvet along my cheek. The path was deep and rutted down to naked tree roots in places, but weeds were beginning to encroach on the path, as if it wasn't used as much as it once had been. Dory moved down the uneven path with an easy, swinging stride. She was obviously familiar with the path, but it was more than that. The tree limbs that caught on my shirt didn't get caught in her hair. The roots that threatened to trip me didn't slow her down. We'd found ointment at a health food store, so the bushes moving for her and not for us was real, not illusion. Maybe glamour wasn't the only thing to worry about. Which was why the browning was loaded with non-silver bullets. I'd had to go out and buy some special for the occasion. Larry was loaded up too, and for the first time I wished he had two guns. I still had the Firestar with silver ammo, but Larry was out of luck if a vamp jumped us. Of course it was broad daylight. I was more worried about fairies than vamps right this minute. There was salt in our shirt pockets, not a lot, but you didn't need much. Just enough to throw on the Fae or the thing being magicked. Salt disrupted Fae magic. Temporarily. A breeze came up the path. It grew into a wind in one fitful gust. The air smelled clean and fresh. You hoped the beginning of time smelled like that. Like fresh bread, clean laundry, childhood memories of spring. It probably smelled like ozone and swamp water. Reality almost always smells worse than daydream. Dory stopped and turned back to us. The trees across the path are just illusion. They're not solid.
What trees? Larry asked.
I cursed silently. It would have been nice to keep the ointment a secret. Dory took 2 steps back towards us. She stared at my face from inches away, then made a face like she'd seen something unclean.
You're wearing ointment.
She made it sound like a very bad thing.
Magnus did try to bedazzle us 2 times. Nothing wrong with being cautious, I said.
Well, our illusions won't matter to you then. She took off at a faster pace, leaving us to stumble after her. The path led into a clearing that was nearly a perfect circle. There was a small mound in the center, with a white stone Celtic cross in the middle of a mass of vibrant blue flowers. Every inch of ground was covered with bluebells. English bluebells, thick and fleshy, bluer than the sky. The flowers never grew in this country without help. They never grew in Missouri without more water than was practical. But standing in the solid mass of blue surrounded by trees, it seemed worth it. Dory stood frozen nearly knee-deep in the flowers. She was staring open-mouthed, a look of horror on her lovely face. Magnus Bouvier knelt in the flowers on top of the mound near the cross. His mouth was bright with fresh blood. Something moved around him, in front of him, something more felt than seen. If it was an illusion, the ointment should have taken care of it. I tried looking at it out of the corner of my eye. Sometimes peripheral vision works better on magic than straight on sight. From the corner of my eye I could see the air swimming in something that was almost a shape. It was bigger than a man. Magnus turned and saw us. He stood up abruptly, and the swimming air blinked out like it had never been. He wiped a sleeve across his mouth.
Dory.
His voice was soft and strangled.
Dory clawed her way up the hill. She screamed, "Blasphemy!" and smacked him.
I could hear the slap all the way across the clearing.
"Ouch," Larry said. "Why is she mad?"
She hit him again, hard enough to sit him down on his butt in the flowers.
"How could you? How could you do such a vile thing?"
"What did he do?" Larry asked.
"He's been feeding off raw head and bloody bones just like his ancestor," I said. Dory turned to me. She looked haggard, horrified, as if she had caught her brother molesting children.
"It was forbidden to feed," she turned back to Magnus. "You knew that."
"I wanted the power, Dory. What harm did it do?"
"What harm? What harm?"
She grabbed a handful of his long hair and pulled him to his knees. She exposed the bite marks on his neck.
"This is why that creature can call you. This is why one of the Dina Shi, even a half-breed like you, is called by death."
She let go so abruptly that he fell forward on his hands and knees. Dory sat down in the flowers and cried. I waded into the flowers. They parted like water, but they didn't move. They were just never exactly where you were stepping.
"Jesus, are they moving out of the way?" Larry asked.
"Not exactly," Magnus said. He walked down the mound to stand at its base. He was wearing the white tuxedo from last night, or what was left of it. The smear of blood on his shirt sleeve was very bright against the whiteness. We waded through the flowers that were moving and not moving to join him in front of the mound. He'd shoved his hair back behind his ears so his face was visible. And no, his ears weren't pointed. Where do these rumors get started? He met my eyes without flinching. If he was ashamed of what he'd done, it didn't show. Dory was still weeping in the bluebells like her heart would break.
"So now you know," he said.
"You can't bleed a fairy, in the flesh or not in the flesh, without ritual magic. I've read the spell, Magnus. It's a doozy," I said. He smiled at that, and the smile was still lovely, but the blood at the corner of his mouth ruined the effect. "I had to tie myself to the beastie. I had to give him some of my mortality in order to get his blood."
"The spell isn't meant to help you gather blood," I said. "It's to help the fairies kill each other." "If it got some of your mortality, did you get some of its immortality?" Larry asked.
It was a good question.
"Yes," Magnus said, "but that wasn't why I did it."
"You did it for power, you son of a bitch," Dory said.
She came down the mound, sliding in the strange flowers.
"You just had to do real glamour, real magic. My God, Magnus, you must have been drinking its blood for years, ever since you were a teenager. That's when your power suddenly got so strong. We all thought it was puberty."
"Afraid not, sister dear." She spit at him.
"Our family was cursed, tied to this land forever in repentance for doing what you have done. Bloody bones broke free last time someone tried to drink from his veins."
"It's been safely imprisoned for 10 years, Dory,"
How do you know? How do you know that nebulous thing you called up hasn't been out scaring children?
As long as it doesn't hurt any of them, what's the harm?
Wait a minute, said Larry. Why would it scare children?